Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
In game one of the NBA Finals, Giannis looked like a guy that we could count on. But as we stared out at the rest of this Bucks roster, we came away with a lot more questions than answers. So what to do about game two? It's Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. Mike Golic Jr., Katie George, kind enough to join us again here on the show, ACC Network host and reporter here. And Katie walked into the show today, which I appreciated. Walked into as today as we're getting ready to get started, and I look up and all of a sudden I see the Milwaukee Bucks flag being flown around here, and she says, "Yeah, I just figured that was cool around this show." So, Katie, clearly you've seen me very mutely wear my Notre Dame fandom on this show. Is that fair?
That's fair. I've also seen you in t-shirts, so I felt like a jersey was appropriate, especially since my Bucks, I think, need some help this evening in game two. Is that fair after the display we saw in game one on Tuesday night?
That is probably fair, yes. So I can say we are the college kegger of a radio show around here at ESPN Radio, so jerseys welcome, even though they're usually backwards at most of the parties I went to. But Katie, you are right. As we look at this series, it kind of is at the point we're at now. We watched that game one, and the Phoenix Suns, especially for that backcourt, Chris Paul and Devin Booker, looked unstoppable. But you got to take some solace in the fact that Giannis looked like the absolute freak of nature that we're used to seeing, right? Like I joked watching that game, this is why they don't call him the Greek regular person. No one else would be able to do this.
No, and I was so happy, A, just to see him back on the court, right? Because on Tuesday when we were doing this show, throughout the day we were watching his status. It went from doubtful to questionable and then upgraded to a game-time decision, which I think shocked a whole lot of people. We even had John Barry, who was on the ESPN radio call, come on, and he said, yeah, there's no way Giannis is going to be able to go. This is just a smokescreen, right? Just to keep the Phoenix Suns on their toes. And yet we saw Giannis maybe not at full force, but my gosh, 7 days after that injury in Atlanta in game four, to be able to come out and put up 20 points and 17 boards, not to mention that freak of a play where he came from behind to pin that ball on the backboard from Mikal Bridges. Like, to me, it looked like, wow, he's not favoring that knee. He's still explosive. And this is a guy, Mike, that we've talked about. He loves to play the game, and through that, he finds his rhythm. So having 7 days off, getting to play in game one, I only expect him to be better tonight in game two.
I would agree with you on that one. And by the way, John Barry, at the end of the broadcast on ESPN Radio, and he'll be a part of that great crew again coming up here, apologized to us for the audacity he treated our question with here. Because, Kay, you and I, you were surprised too, right? When I asked JB about that, and he just treated it like it was a complete non-issue.
Whoa.
It was a little spicy. So
it was spicy.
John Barry did give us some love at the end of that broadcast, which we greatly appreciate. So it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So, Katie, if we're going to look at Giannis and say, all right, after that game one performance, that checked a box for us, meaning we feel like we can count on Giannis Antetokounmpo again. We weren't sure when we were going to get him back this series. We weren't sure what it was going to look like exactly. And between time and quality, it exceeded all of our wildest expectations. So looking out here tonight, who's the next player that you have your eye on here? Because if we're going to count Giannis as, okay, we can count on that, who's the most important player then for either team heading into tonight's game that's going to sway game two?
I think it's got to be Jrue Holiday, right? You had Chris Middleton. He showed up 29 points for the Bucks in game one, and he didn't necessarily have the supporting cast that he's used to having, and that lays on the shoulders of Jrue Holiday. Gosh, he was so good in games five and game six against the Hawks. He averaged about 26 points, 11 assists for his team in those two games without Giannis in the Eastern Conference Championship, right? And then Giannis comes back, and I feel like the mindset for Jrue shifted a little bit where he was no longer the aggressor, right? He was no longer attacking downhill. He wasn't taking the open shots from behind the arc like we saw in games five and six. And that was unfortunate because the whole reason the Bucks went out and they got Jrue Holiday in the offseason was because they didn't feel like Eric Bledsoe was getting it done when it mattered most in the playoffs, right? Yes, Bledsoe's a great defender, but they weren't loving his offensive production when all of the focus was on Giannis and K-Mid throughout the playoffs. So they said, you know what, we're going to go get a guy who's just as good on defense, but who's going to be able to run our point and who's going to be able to provide offensively. And last night, you know, 4 of 14 from the field, 10 points, even though he had 7 boards and 9 assists. That's not going to cut it from your third best option, right? And I think Mike Boonholzer after the game said, sometimes it's hard to get three guys going. Well, the Suns got three guys going in Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and DeAndre Ayton. So you hope for the Bucks, if they're going to be able to win and pull out this series, they've got to have Drew Holiday playing well.
And I think Drew Holiday playing well would remedy one of the other ills from game one, because Mike Budenholzer, the Bucks head coach, did talk about this with the media ahead of tonight's game here, the free throw disparity there. And I think a lot of that was aggression for Milwaukee. But here was Coach Bud trying to get the rest ready to go for game two.
It's a huge part of the game. You know, they have 25 points from the free throw line. You know, we're a team that prides ourselves in defending and being able to be good defensively without fouling. I can't remember the last time a team got 25 free throws in a game against the Bucks. And then conversely, you know, the way Giannis attacks, the way Chris attacks, as many opportunities as Chris has with the ball. It's frustrating, but it's part of the sport, it's part of the game. We got to be better defensively. We got to keep them off the free throw line, and we got to be more aggressive attacking and getting to the free throw line and getting to good offense.
Janan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, Mike Golic Jr. and Katie George. And I think the only thing weirder than speaking as a person outside of a team and saying us is Coach Bud referring to his team in the third person and saying against the Bucks. Like, did you catch that, Katie? Because it seemed a little off to have the head coach of the team treating it like it's somebody else having this happen to him.
Yeah, I think Coach Bud sometimes misspeaks a little bit in his media availability, so not surprised that he referred to the Bucks in third person there.
You know what? Like, it's nice for him to at least get out there and just distract with something like that, as opposed to people wanting to question more of his coaching tactics here. But you said Drew Holiday for this, the most important player, and I could see that. But even the notion of getting three guys going, the Milwaukee Bucks in the prior series, when Giannis Antetokounmpo was out, became the first team, I believe, in the last 30 years to have four different players go for 20 and 5 in a game. Like, they're able to get a lot of people going when this offense really hums. And, Katie, we know the difference is Giannis has a gravity to his game. Sure. When he comes in, everything is going to go towards him, understandably, because he's so talented here. And that's why I feel like, as much as Drew Holiday is the straw that stirs the drink, I think for a game like this that you're going to have to win close. You're going to be on Phoenix's home floor. I think this has to be another one of those Chris Middleton moments where, the other game, he had a high volume of points, but it was largely inefficient. It wasn't what we were used to for him. I need to go back to that Batman and Robin conversation that Perk and everybody wants to have about these guys. I don't care what you want to dub the relationship. When you get Chris Middleton hot in the fourth quarter of games, he's your closer. He's the guy that you need to help slam the door shut, or in this case, keep it ajar if you're trying to mount some comeback there. So I feel like if they can get to a spot where, yes, we're back comfortable understanding Giannis can initiate a lot for us in the first three quarters, but when it comes time for go time in the fourth quarter, we got to toss the rock to Chris and let him work.
Yeah, we do. And you were hopeful that you were going to see that in game one, right? Because they were coming off such beautiful performances in games five and game six from Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton. Brooke Lopez had a phenomenal game five, and he didn't necessarily show up in game one against the Suns. So you thought, gosh, they're going to be riding high, right? They're going to have all the confidence in the world, all the belief. And then, oh, by the way, you get Giannis back as well. Like, that's best case scenario. So you would have expected the Bucks to come out and play better than they did. But so often you hear defense can turn into offense, right? When you're playing lockdown defense and you're playing so well on that floor, it just results into fast break points, right? Well, we didn't see a whole lot of that for the Bucks. Actually, the Suns had a playoff high 20 against, well, it was a playoff high in terms of allowing 20 fast break points for the Suns, but that's not something that the Milwaukee Bucks usually do. They don't turn the ball over a whole heck of a lot, and they don't let it resort into 20 fast break points. And so that hurt them. You mentioned the free throws. There was just a bunch of things that I thought that they looked off on. And if they can figure out what to do in terms of the switching or not, just fighting over top of the ball screens like we've seen them do in the past, or maybe a combination of both, if they can figure out how to limit those mid-range opportunities for Paul and for Booker, maybe that'll help them settle in. And then the defense can help kickstart the offense on the other end.
Yeah, we'll get it to in a little bit coming up what the biggest reason the Suns gave the Bucks problem is. What we saw from game one that the Bucks have to absolutely go out and make sure they limit before they can get a dub tonight. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. But coming up next, Do we have to all of a sudden file a change of address paperwork for Titletown USA after the most recent championship banner got plucked last night? We will get to that celebration and how it sounded next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Now, before we get to what the hell the Bucks are supposed to do in Game 2 tonight against this Suns backcourt on Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, when we will talk to PJ Carlissimo, our ESPN NBA analyst, is going to be on the pregame here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Katie George, we got to stop and take a moment to celebrate, Katie, because I know we always have these Titletown USA discussions in the world of sports, and I never imagined I would get to come on radio and say, you know what? Tampa's making a strong push for that hold.
Tampa is red hot right now, winning back-to-back Stanley Cups. Who would have thunk it?
Certainly not me.
Maybe us. Ryan Matlack, maybe?
Perhaps Ryan Matlack may have thunk it here. You guys may know him as our great producer, the host of On Thin Ice, as a part of the great hockey coverage here at ESPN Radio. And we're going to get to Ryan in a second because he is not with us today in person, but we want to make sure he's here today in spirit, especially when we got stuff like this going on, because the best part of anyone winning the Stanley Cup, and for Tampa Bay, no doubt the beginning potentially of a dynasty here, a bunch of clever cap work financially to make this happen that's going to tick a lot of people off. The best part is undoubtedly the lengths that people go at these celebrations here. And so when we get a shirtless Nikita Kucherov after this game at the podium, I'm required by law, both natural and here at ESPN Radio, to make sure that you good people hear what it sounds like when this man becomes a champion.
How would you describe your emotions right now after doing what you guys did?
I don't know what to say. Back to back, and I couldn't sleep for three nights. You know, and to be able to win this game is huge. Wesley was outstanding. MVP. I was telling him every day, Wesley, you MVP. You're the best player. And then they gave it to whatever the guy in Vegas, the Vezina. And then last year they gave Vezina to somebody else, number one bull. Wesley took both cups. You know, he took MVP, and I was keep telling him he's MVP. He's the guy that he's the best. You know, he was on his head today, and you know, he kept us in the game, and another shout out for it by him. Remarkable. Can't even tell more. I'm so happy I didn't want to go back to Montreal, but the fans in Montreal, come on. They acted like they won the Stanley Cup last game. You kidding me? Are you kidding me?
John Romano, Tampa Bay Times.
Their final was last series. Okay.
He's not done with the mic yet, John. Nikita Kucherov from the Lightning taking a flamethrower to everything and everyone, including the dump button in that post-game press conference. And if you guys think that's what a champion sounds like, no, I assure you, this is what a champion sounds like, because even though he is not supposed to be working today, Ryan Matlack, our great producer, took some time to join us here. Matlack, how are you feeling after seeing the cup awarded to the Tampa Bay Lightning for a second straight season last night?
Junior, Georgie, thank you so much for having me. As always, I appreciate it. And look at this. We've been moved to a non-hard-out segment. For those in the radio biz, that will hold a little more weight. But huge upgrade for us, a promotion as far as I'm concerned. That was incredible coming in. I was shedding a tear, guys, as you played the beautiful Canadian national anthem. And then I shed another tear as Nikita absolutely trashed Montreal Canadiens fans. No bitterness there at all from the Canadian side. All right, let's get into it real quick. Since I don't have a hard out, I can go for about 10 minutes. Right, Junior?
That's actually the plan here, Matlack. That's why we brought you on here. The people need their puck, and when I think puck, I think Ryan Matlack. So, yeah, you are here. The floor is yours, my friend.
Oh, awesome. All right, smoke him if you got him. You could probably go get a coffee during this. Back to back. All right, Lightning, 2020-21 Stanley Cup champions. Thank you for the music. Appreciate that. Mayor James Castor has re-election in the bag at this point. After losing Game 4 in Montreal, at the mayor's request, of course, the Bolts win in front of an electric crowd. How about that one, Junior? It's fun for the whole family. I had a quick question for you. Have either of you seen the Trailer Park Boys?
Jesus, Ricky!
That's a nice cheeseburger locker you got there, Randy. Absolutely.
Well, Katie, consider that a third time I'm crying here. A tear just rolled down my cheek that you got that. Trailer Park Boys, for those that don't know, the pinnacle of Canadian television, takes place in beautiful Nova Scotia. And at the end of every season, Ricky and Julian always go back to jail. The Lightning are kind of like Ricky and Julian at this point. Do not be surprised if they go back next year and the year after that. They are still stacked. They went 282 days between titles. Shortest span between in the NHL, the NBA, NFL, and Major League Baseball. Incredible standpoint. The Leafs can't do that in 280 years. I can't stress the importance of this team's origin story, Junior. The night is darkest before dawn. They were swept by the Blue Jackets in the first round of the 2019 playoffs. And since then, all you've seen is this team's killer instinct come alive. John Cooper must be delivering Kurt Russell-like speeches pregame. Also, Big Rig winning his third straight cup. Toronto, sign him. On the Canadian side, it was honestly one of the most impressive runs that I've ever seen, but especially the most impressive of this postseason. Every team they played was more talented. They won while their head coach was out for a while. Carey Price stood on his head. Nikita Kucherov, however, he did not hold back. I'm so happy that you guys played those comments because that liquid courage, I had a little bit of that in me last night, and I was literally fist pumping when I saw his comments. One last note here, Vasilevskiy, the greatest goaltender on the planet in the universe. First goaler to win every playoff game for a repeat Stanley Cup champion since Ken Dryden back in 76-79.
Woo, my God. Smoke him if you got him. Indeed, Matt. Like, Katie, I'm not surprised here that he brought the heat here. Our resident hockey expert here, the lovable Canadian, Ryan Matlack.
Is he the lovable Canadian, though? Because somebody just told me, Matlack, that you were born in New Hampshire. Is that true?
Who's your source on this, Katie?
Wow. Wow. These allegations are staggering, Ryan.
I just feel like I have bought into the Canadian lifestyle, and I have supported you in that, and I know that you are part Canadian, but you were born on this side. Is that true?
Yeah, but baptized on the Canadian side, so I really Canadian water poured on my head. I think that pretty much, and I am a dual citizen, and also, honestly, a citizen of the world. I think that's all we need to really talk about here. I mean, last night I was drinking Molson. I had a Presidente as well. I'm all over the place, north and south of the border. Don't you worry about where I'm from, Katie.
That is true. When he says he was baptized in Canadian water, he means he was dumped in a pool of Molsons as a baby. That is how every Canadian baby enters this great nation and enters their lifetime as a hockey fan. Matlack, you are an absolute beauty and a gem, sir. Congratulations on a stellar NHL season and finish here for you as a citizen of the world and a citizen of this great league, buddy. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks for taking the time, Matlack. Love you.
I really appreciate it, and I do want to give a shout-out. All three stars go to us, crew. This was a hell of a run for on thin ice. The ice never cracked. We made it all this way. Thanks to everybody, especially you, Junior, and Jerry, behind the scenes, Becky, everybody. It's been a blast doing this. And one more. Ready? There we go. Vacation mode, baby. Let's go. Cheers. See you later.
Is that him just popping a top?
I think that's the first beer cracked on radio air in history. The dismount from the heavens as Ryan Matlack joined us on the Goodyear Hotline. We're brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. I tell you what, coming up next, PJ Carlismar, NBA analyst, is going to have his work cut out for him. We'll get to PJ and the NBA Finals game two after this word from 5-Hour Energy. Now, if you want to get in shape, but you're having trouble staying motivated, you got to make 5-Hour Energy Shots part of your lifestyle and get the energy boost that you need to get fit. And boy, oh boy, guys, I've had like four different body types in the last year, so count me among you. You always know where to find 5-Hour Energy Shots, right at the cash register at nearly every convenience, drug, and grocery store nationwide. Or you can go to 5hourenergy.com today and use promo code GOLIC to receive 10% off your order. That's the number 5hourenergy.com, promo code GOLIC for 10% off. This offer cannot be used with other promotions. Code is not applicable on subscription orders. Back after this to see if someone else will pop the top on a beverage during a segment next on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chenang Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., Katie George, filling in for Chenea Gwimike today. Our thanks to Ryan Matlack, our producer, hockey analyst extraordinaire, joining us last segment. And I think officially being the first person that I've ever heard to crack a beer as the dismount to a segment. Katie, you've done a lot of media, so I want to open this up to you, but I'm pretty sure that's a first.
That has to be a first. In my lifetime, certainly.
And it's only right that it was Ryan Matlack here. But we got to remind you guys that while the Stanley Cup was handed out last night to the Tampa Bay Lightning, we still got some time before we hand out the hardware in the NBA. The NBA Finals are on ESPN Radio. Tune in tonight, Game 2. Devin Booker and the Suns host Chris Middleton and the Bucks, presented by Indeed. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern on most ESPN radio stations. And to help us break down the quest for this trophy, our ESPN NBA analyst, PJ Carlissimo, joining us here on the Goodyear Hotline, going to be part of the pregame coverage here on ESPN Radio. PJ, how are you doing today?
Excellent, Mike. Good afternoon. Hi, Katie.
Happy to have you here, Coach. We're looking forward to tonight. And I guess starting with that, putting the coaching hat on, heading into Game 2 of this series, how big of an adjustment swing are you usually willing to make as a coach from one game to the next in a setting like this if you're Mike Budenholzer, who's been so scrutinized for the way he's attacked this?
Not a ton for this one. I think you get a little bit deeper into it. I've always felt, Mike, that the Game 1 in the finals is different than Game 1 in the first three rounds because you're playing somebody you're not as familiar with. You know, when you're playing your own conference, even with the crazy seasons we've had back-to-back, I mean, you know, historically, you're playing somebody you've played four times a year. You're playing somebody that you know fairly well. It's not the case when you get to the finals. You're playing a team from the other conference, unless you have a unique situation like maybe Golden State and Cleveland playing a couple years in a row. So you're playing somebody you don't know as well, and that first game is a feeling out game. You make some adjustments. Bud's certainly going to adjust how he defends the pick and roll a little bit, but I don't think he's going to – you're not going to do – anything drastic right away because you've been doing something well all year. You didn't get to where you are right now, but by not doing things well. And even if it didn't look good in Game 1, you got to look at some other factors. There were a lot of things that happened in Game 1 that weren't normal. By that I mean the free throw discrepancy. Milwaukee's the best in the league at not committing fouls. So you had that was one thing. They shot a lot of fouls. Milwaukee shot extremely poorly inside the three-point line. Kind of very strange. Their second-chance points, they didn't have many because they missed stick-backs. They didn't have many points in the paint because they didn't shoot well in the lane. So I think that's something that they can expect to be different. I think they can expect free throw discrepancy to be different. CP wasn't good. He was incredible, and he shot the ball extremely well. So, I mean, I think it exaggerated even the way he and Devin Booker were carving up that pick and roll and carving up the switches because CP basically made every shot he took. I mean, he was making threes. Every decision he made was the right decision. Like Devin Booker, for instance, didn't shoot it as well. I expect Book to shoot it a little bit better, but I don't think CP is going to knock down everything he looks at again tonight. So I think they'll be reluctant to go wholesale change. To look at the fourth quarter and the small lineup was absolutely, it was the most points the fewest points Phoenix scored in a quarter, the most points the Bucks scored in a quarter. But Brook Lopez didn't play at all. You look at Brook's numbers, he was arguably probably their second-best player. He didn't even play in the fourth quarter, and that's really the conundrum to me. He's been so effective, particularly when he gets the ball in the paint. He beat them down the floor early in some transitions. He's their best shot blocker. I think he's third in the playoffs in terms of blocked shots. So they're not going to just get rid of him. So they got some tough decisions to make, but I don't expect to see a lot of changes tonight. I think they'll play better. Drew Holiday, I think, will shoot the ball better, as will Devin Booker. And I think you'll get a better read after tonight's game in terms of what major changes you have to make.
To your point, Coach, we should see some minor tweaks, right, defensively from the Bucks. But what do you think, in your view, is the key to limiting Chris Paul or at least making him somewhat uncomfortable, more so than what we saw on Tuesday night?
Well, I mean, obviously, Katie, it would be the longer you can keep Drew Holiday or Chris Middleton or, their good perimeter defenders on him. They can't even control him. I mean, we're talking one of the best players in the league, one of the best players ever. So it's not like anybody's going to shoot him down. You know, as much as everybody made a big deal, it looked terrible when Brook Lopez and Bobby Portis were defending him. And you know, nobody said anything about the fourth quarter. Well, in the fourth quarter, when they got the mismatches they wanted, they attacked Pat Connaughton and they attacked Bryn Forbes also. So, I mean, they're going to find, you know, the defender that they feel most comfortable attacking no matter what you do. CP just had one of those games. I'm not saying he's not going to play really well again tonight, but, I mean, if he's making all his shots, including his threes, because his decision making is always good, so you know they're going to get the good ones. So somehow they got to keep, maybe not switch as much, not just switch every time people cross or do a dribble handoff. Because the more time that Drew Holiday or Chris Middleton or their good defensive guards are on CP or Devin Booker, the better off for them. The less time that, you know, they play against the bigs. But I just think that their pick and roll defense was not very good at all. They'll be the first to tell you that. And Phoenix was so good offensively that, in a strange way, that was one of the reasons Milwaukee got very little in transition after early in the game when Brook beat him down the floor a couple times. They were taking the ball out of bounds the whole game. There were too many free throws, and they made them all. Phoenix made all of them. They missed one free throw. So, I mean, if you think of it, the game was constantly Milwaukee taking the ball out of bounds. They didn't force turnovers. They didn't get enough stops. They weren't running off misses or turnovers or missed free throws. So I just think potentially the game can be very different tonight. It can look very different on its own, just playing exactly the same way. Now, they won't play exactly the same way. They'll try to minimize those big switches as much as they can. But easier said than done. CP especially, and Devin to, you know, a slightly lesser extent, they just read what you're doing, and they take what you're going to give them. And when you got guys who can shoot threes, who are really comfortable in the mid range, a lot of guys that, you know, don't like going into the mid range. Those guys live in there. They get down by the free throw line, and they're not close enough for the bigs to distract them at the rim, and they're still effective shooters. So they're a nightmare defending. There's no question about that.
And it's going to be exciting to see how the Bucks try and defend that nightmare again tonight. Game 2 of the NBA Finals. You can hear it on ESPN Radio. You can hear more great analysis like that from PJ Carlissimo and the rest of the crew on the pregame as well, when you keep it tuned right after we get done here. PJ, we appreciate the time. Enjoy the game tonight. We're looking forward to it.
Thanks, PJ.
All right, Mike, thanks a lot. Katie, great being with you.
PJ Carlissimo, our ESPN Radio NBA analyst, giving us a couple minutes ahead of game 2 tonight. All right, coming up next, though, one of the big topics in this last month was so much surrounding Naomi Osaka, one of the brightest young stars in tennis, making a decision to pull back. Well, we finally heard from her again. What has she learned about the relationship between star athletes and the media, and what does she want us to know? Next, here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat insurance. Visit Progressive.com. Chinay and Golic Jr., Mike Golic Jr., Katie George filling in for Chinay Agwumike today. Kind enough to hang out with us. You guys can catch her patrolling the sidelines, hosting many great things in the booth all over at the ACC Network around ESPN here. And Katie, you also, we can be hear you on Sunday mornings, Best Week Ever with Peter Burns from 7 to 10 Eastern. And I know you guys were probably like the rest of us here a while back when we were at Roland Garros for the French Open, talking about what went on with Naomi Osaka, one of the brightest young stars in tennis, who made the decision leading up to that tournament to first spurn her responsibilities that pro athletes do to meet with the media, to meet with the press prior to the tournament before withdrawing altogether, citing mental health, citing taking care of her mental health as a reason why. And I saw she had a Time Magazine article that just dropped this week here that she wrote from her perspective on going through that event about some suggestions that she has both for tennis and the world of sports, which include the idea of giving athletes the right to take a mental break from media scrutiny in the form of something akin to a sick day that you would see in other places. She said, quote, "I communicated that I wanted to skip the press conferences at Roland Garros to exercise self-care and preserve my mental health. I stand by that. athletes are humans, tennis is our privileged profession, and of course, there are commitments off the court that coincide. But I can't imagine another profession where a consistent attendance record, in parentheses, I have missed one press conference in my 7 years on tour, would be so harshly scrutinized. So, Katie, does she have a point there that maybe this was a situation that got made out to be bigger than it was?
I think she does. I just wish it maybe was handled differently. First off, I appreciate the fact that, A, she had the recognition to say, hey, I'm not in a great place right now, and maybe it's best for me to step aside. But not only recognizing it, then having the courage, right, to step up and say, I'm not in a good mental space. I need some time, and this media press conference isn't what's best for me right now. I just wish she would have maybe communicated that prior with the French Open and those people that she was working with, because I felt like it got so heightened because it happened right then and there, and then they wanted to obviously fine her because they want her to be a part of media days, right? And why wouldn't they? So I see it from both sides, and the fact that Naomi wasn't in a great headspace and she needed to take time away. Good for her for recognizing it and then vocalizing it. But at the same time, I see where the French Open's coming from. The French Open's not like the Super Bowl, where no matter what kind of advertising you're putting out there, people are obviously going to watch and they know where to find it. Some people didn't even know the French Open was going on until Naomi Osaka made headlines, right? And so for the French Open, the greatest thing that generates money is TV. And if you want to build your brand, get eyeballs watching your event, you need the number one overall player in the world to sit down and do media. Because say you're at Qdoba or Chipotle, right, and SportsCenter is on in the background as you're getting your lunch during workday, and you see Naomi Osaka pubbing her first game, right, in the French Open, you might think, wow, that's the number one player in the world. You know what? As a casual fan, I'm not doing anything this Saturday. Why don't I sit down and turn that on and watch? And so I think from the French Open standpoint, they have a valid, you know, point of, hey, we want you to do this kind of media. But Naomi also raises good points as well in terms of trying to protect herself as well as other athletes who might be facing similar issues.
Yeah, I think in hearing from her, one of the things that she suggested was just the idea that we look at this process. And from that standpoint, I totally understand it. Like you, the media has a role in all this in making sure and helping promote the sport. We hear and talk about it all the time with Major League Baseball, a sport where we often question, is the league doing enough to get its star athletes out in front of the masses in a way that tennis and other sports try and do with these press settings? I agree with Naomi in the fact that everything deserves a look. Like, can we make this better for all parties involved, and can we communicate it in a better way? But, Katie, there's also a learning curve with this kind of stuff, with every athlete's relationship with the media, where they go from maybe feeling like it's adversarial or antagonistic, as she felt like here, and understanding that can also be something that you use to your gain.
Absolutely, and I think LeBron James is the perfect example of that, Mike. Somebody within the Cavs organization sat him down during his time there and said, look, this isn't a bad thing. You've got so many other opportunities and so many things that your hands are in outside of basketball. You've got the LeBron James Family Foundation, right? The More Than a Vote campaign was also something that he cared deeply about. Like, use your everyday media availability as a platform to promote things that you're working on outside of the game. And I think that LeBron James is one of the first athletes that we saw that said, hey, I'm really going to buy into that mantra. And he did such a great job with it. And he still does a great job with it, vocalizing on so many different topics well outside of the game of basketball. And he was actually used as an example during my time in Milwaukee with Giannis Antetokounmpo, who, quite frankly, did not like talking to the media. He would be perfectly happy if he never had to speak to the media. And he was, at that time, two seasons ago, talking to the media from availability once a week. That's not good enough if you're a superstar, which he is, in a smaller market, right? And so I think Giannis has even started to come around where he looks at the media now as an opportunity and not something that he just has to check off the to-do list.
It's so true. And that opportunity, everyone can approach differently, but I'll never forget my short time with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin's the best I've ever met around a press conference, because he said, no matter what anyone in that room wants to ask me, I know the message I want to get across to our fans, to the media, and to our team, and that's what I'm going to use that time for. And so hopefully Naomi can get to a place where she's comfortable. Hopefully we can receive some of this feedback and ask what the media's role in this should all be. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. Coming up next, though, we'll take our eyes back to Game 2 of the NBA Finals. Try and figure out if Game 1 was more about the Suns or the Bucks. Next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Janae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.